Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to the Conscious Business Radio Network. Freedom of speech is something that we must be vigilant to maintain. Naomi Wolf has a great quote where she says, "The First Amendment was designed to allow for disruption of business as usual. It is not quiet and subdued amendment or right." And I think that is so true. It's going to be loud. It's going to be in your face at times. There are going to be individuals who spread hatred and fear and other social ills, but this is the price of freedom. I'm going to tell you a story about my father's childhood friend and later college roommate, who was David Goldberger. He was the ACLU lawyer who famously defended the Nazis in the important landmark case, the National Socialist Party of America versus the Village of Skokie. For anybody who is a little older, they would remember that. Or if anybody has studied history or the Constitution, they would know this landmark case. Goldberger was a Jewish lawyer who, against the wishes of his mother and other people in his community, he defended the free speech of the most disliked group in America and perhaps the world at that time, which were the Nazis. Goldberger believed, and so did the ACLU, that freedom of speech belongs to everyone, not just to those you agree with. He was a true American hero who, for the general good of the country, risked his personal relationships and risked being an outcast within his own community. Today, we need that same courage to ensure our freedoms stay intact in the new communication age that we find ourselves in today. I'm going to tell you a story about, my father has a lot of stories about his college days and so forth, about his friend with David. But he recalls a time in college when an obnoxious individual came and hung a burning cross on the outside of their dorm room. And my father has a temper, and he went out there and he caught the guy. And this is actually a funny tale. He lifted him up by his, shirt, and he was really mad, and he was threatened to beat him up. And the guy literally crapped his pants and he ran away. And now that's a funny story. And but what's amazing about that is David Goldberger remained calm the whole time. He had become accustomed to a certain level of harassment and discrimination. You got to remember at this time it wasn't that far after the World War II. And so people remember the discrimination against the Jewish people, and occurrences like this made his defense of the Nazis that much more incredible. And that's the kind of courage and self-sacrifice that we need in our world today to make sure that freedom of speech continues. We can't allow people to be silenced when we have something that makes us feel uncomfortable, when it's important that these rights are maintained. Well, this episode of Business Game Changers, we discuss freedom of speech and whether our rights are being slowly eroded. Daniel List, a.k.a. Dark Journalist, rejoined us today, and we dive into this topic. He explains what is happening to journalists in the United States and how Google, Facebook, our government, and other entities are systematically censoring the alternative media and silencing journalists. Just a little background on Daniel. He calls himself Dark Journalist, and he coined that term. And he is an independent journalist and thought leader in the alternative media. His work is heavily sought after because of the professional manner in which he covers important topics that are typically shunned by the mainstream media. He has been very popular online, racking up millions of views by his followers. And we are going to have Daniel list. Join us right now. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so glad that you're back.
Yes. It's great to be back.
I love talking to you. You have really interesting things to talk about.
Well, I've been listening to your show recently, and I'm a regular listener, as you know, and you've been cracking a lot of fantastic territory also.
I've had some really great people on lately, and I have some really great ones coming up, including this interview that I have right now, which is going to be really interesting. And let's get into this, because we're going to be talking about alternative media, and you have talked about the crackdown on alternative media, and what have you seen take place that brings you to this conclusion?
Well, it's very interesting, actually. With Dark Journalist, which is my show, that, I've been building up over time. I've been tracking media patterns all the way back to the 1940s and 50s. So I can see the kind of developments of how the press became corrupt and how the corporate press took over, especially with the consolidation in the past 20 years of most media entities into 6 corporations. So basically, every single thing that we were seeing was controlled by a small group of corporations. Now, what started to happen was that the alternative media, by and large, the sites that were not,
with the advent of the internet. So basically, the conglomerate, all these 6 corporations happened before the internet really became popular in the early 90s, right?
In the early 90s. There's no question that there was a wave with the internet that really boosted this. There were seeds of alternative media. I mean, you can go back to the 1970s, and there's a very popular radio show, which is Mae Brussels, which is kind of like the first podcast in a weird way, because people traded those cassettes.
So it was really radio versus now we have a plethora of other kinds of media.
There's no question that talk radio was the first version of alternative media. Because, I mean, there were zines and there were different movements like that. The reason I mentioned Mae Brussels' show is because people really traded the tapes the way that people plug in podcasts and stuff nowadays. It wasn't really married to any one particular station. It wasn't married to any one thing. But what she did was incredibly deep research around where the media was getting its funding, where the politicians were coming from, what corporations and, what nonprofits were giving grants and who was doing favors for who. And it was really hardcore journalism, really. So she sort of set the mold. And I think, in a way, she was coming from a more left-wing thing. I think even John Lennon had funded some of her research and stuff. So she came in from this whole angle during the Nixon era.
Well, that's incredible research. Do we have anybody that's comparable to that now?
Well, it's interesting. Certainly, there's a number of people in journalism who I think, more high-profile journalists, that came out and they were starting to realize there were trends, especially with the Obama administration crackdown on journalists. The Obama administration has used the Espionage Act on journalists more than all presidents combined since it was announced in 1917. It was actually Woodrow Wilson put together the Espionage Act for World War I. So for them to use it as a strange loophole to get people to be quiet about certain things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership or like NSA spying and things like that is really outrageous when you think about it. And one of these journalists actually was called Cheryl Atkinson. She had an amazing book called Stonewall, where she realized when she started to work on these areas that the Obama administration didn't want her to look into, especially around NSA spying, that she started to get spied on and she was surveilled and her laptop was completely throttled by the intel teams that were looking into what she had and so on. And there were a number of things that happened there, and CBS, at a certain point, went with her. They actually backed her up for a little while, and then they were like, no mas.
We it can't just got her. Too much heat.
Yeah, exactly. And so she went out on her own, and now she does a lot of work, and that book was a bestseller. It was a great expose. Here we have a mainstream journalist trying to do a mainstream job of journalism. And, there are other cases, I think, that have used the Espionage Act in this way, which is a foreshadowing of what's happening now in the alternative media. There's another case I can think of, which is the case of James Risen, which is a very interesting story, actually. He got involved in a case where the Justice Department very much wanted to force him to testify and reveal his source and so on. And it was all about this case that involved Jeffrey Sterling, which is a long story here, but you can look it up, and certainly we do some coverage on it. But all that precipitated this incredible pressure, and they try to subpoena him, and the Obama administration really try to force the issue of having this guy testify. And even when courts would drop it, the Obama administration kept coming back to it and so on. So this led to a big battle, I think.
It was really harassment, because even though they had no case in court, they were still the powers were still going after him politically, which
absolutely.
And that's what we're seeing with the Espionage Act. But then there's other journalists. I think what you're saying is not only do we have more people under the Espionage Act, but people have been targeted by these political powers, and also people have been killed. Correct.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Michael Hastings is a particularly important subject on that. I think he would be somebody I would identify, which is, technically his death was an accident. But certainly with the types of things that he was looking into, again, this is a guy who did a great deal of reporting about the Pentagon. And actually, through his reporting, a top general serving in Afghanistan, it was revealed, certain things that he had said about having lack of respect for the leadership. And he actually got replaced in that whole thing with McChrystal. And it's a long story, but the idea was that he had a way of penetrating into what we were doing in Afghanistan, how the military operated, and so forth. And he was working on a story that had to do with drug running. And then suddenly they found him in this bizarre accident where his engine was found, 27 feet from the car. And so Hastings, I think, became, a lot of these things became a strange echo around, what is the nature of journalism in America today? And so it's a very important thing, free speech, the free press, it's such a core thing. But what happens when these people, even like Cheryl Atkinson, as we were talking about for CBS News, she comes forward and says, well, the Obama administration was harassing me and surveilling me because I was getting too close to their secrets, basically. And, she's operating legally as a journalist, getting her sources. So I think, it's not just the Obama administration, of course, the Bush administration.
Sure.
And the Clinton administration before them, really. They took a lot of journalists to task. But the idea that the Obama administration, using this kind of strange loophole of we'll prosecute you under the Espionage Act, is to send a chilling effect through the world of journalism. In terms of what you can cover, so you can't look into this, you can't look into this type of political corruption. You can't look into surveillance. Well, you're getting into Homeland Security, so it's a way of protecting. And of course, when you're in politics, the power structure always wants to protect itself. But when they go outside the law protecting themselves, then I think we have an issue in America with the free press and with journalism in general.
Well, that's the pillar of freedom, right? If we don't have free press, then we don't have freedom. And in a fragile democracy, it's even more important for there to be open debate and transparency.
Well, we have kind of a schizophrenic situation in America on the press, I'll tell you. And I think that's what I'm doing here and what you're doing here is sort of trying to sort that part out. Because for example, we had this thing that railroaded through Congress called the Media Shield Act, and that came up as a result of this case I was referencing earlier with James Risen. And the Media Shield Act was meant to say, if you are a journalist and you come forward and you give information, you can't be prosecuted. And if you hold your sources back, you can't be prosecuted. And during the process of when this went through was the Snowden period. And they were like, well, we have to put all these national security loopholes in. You're protecting all the wrong people. And it became this thing where you literally could go after anybody. So it's doing the opposite of what the bill says it does. And Dianne Feinstein famously went on the record saying that, I'll tell you, if, this, I'm not going to protect some 17-year-old blogger, out there with this. So she came forward and basically put it in those terms, that anyone who was doing journalism that wasn't state-sanctioned or corporate-sanctioned was a 17-year-old blogger. So she wasn't going to protect him, was her whole thing. And she was a major voice for stripping those protections out. So it's a very strange situation that we're in. Now, there are movements. You might notice that right after France, for example, had these recent attacks, One of the things that Hollande came out and talked about was he wanted to immediately crack down on the press so that none of the alternative voices could be out there. Now, what they do, and James Cameron did it a year earlier as well, they come forward and they say, in order to get rid of the voices, radical voices out there, we need to do, you know, not allow free press. You know, so in other countries, maybe you can get away with that. In America, it's really hard because, you know, we've got the First Amendment.
There's a reason that free press was put there and why it was such an important cornerstone to our democracy, because anytime that you're trying to get an agenda through, it's you want any naysayers not to talk, right? You don't want that talking because it messes up your agenda. And so there's such a huge incentive to shut down free speech. And that's why it's the number one part of our Constitution. It's the First Amendment. It's because there is just such a huge, incentive to shut that down. And it's so destructive to a country. And it takes away your freedom. And that's the problem. And they know it. This is what their politicians are feeling is, oh, I don't want that free. Well, of course you don't, because it messes up your agenda. But that's the point.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's kind of fascinating when you look at it like that, because you brought up how we were founded and the First Amendment. The fundamental things I think that the founding fathers understood. Thomas Jefferson said, you can't have a republic, a free republic, without a functioning press, because they understood what you were just saying, which is that you need a certain amount of transparency to understand, you know, and function as a democracy, as a republic. The thing is, you know, this always gets over the line where they say, well, we need the secrecy, secrecy, secrecy. And this is their whole thing. You know, they just had James Clapper, the intelligence services head of intelligence in America. And he's saying, well, you know, secrecy is important. We're going to safeguard our ability to surveil whoever we want. And, you know, eventually we are going to have your smart devices spying on you, and that's just the way it is now, you know, on the side of security. So, you know, this is the nature of the problem, is that they can use this fact of our own kind of fear against us. And that's really a trap, because that's not the kind of thing I think that we want to happen. And the other thing is, you know, when we're looking at it from that level, it's so easy to get into this, you know, like they did in France. Okay, there was this horrible attack, and it was terrible, and it's frightening. But you can't use people's reaction and fear to crack down on their liberties. And that's their whole game. They really, you know, it's almost like they use these events. You know, very often we call them false flag events. Well, false flag events are really where they set them up to do this. But sometimes they'll just use a real event and try to scare everyone into accepting these new restrictions to give them more leverage, because they don't like being exposed to that degree. And, you know, it is my opinion that I think in the UK and France, I'd still call on them, you know, to not accept those types of restrictions. But in America, you're going to have a hard time, because America knows that free press aspect, free speech aspect. And the only way you can dumb it down, I think, is by pouring tons of money into a corporate state-sponsored style media.
Exactly.
Which just runs out the alternative media. So the threat of the alternative media, I think, is out there for these guys, because they see the alternative media, you know, like what I'm doing with Dark Journalist, like what you're doing with Business Game Changers. It's bringing the information out. There's no agenda. Nobody's pulling the strings. You know, we're reporters out there. These are our stories. And that's dangerous, I think, because people listening to it, you know, we're getting more market share in alternative media. It's growing.
We have more than, alternative media has more than mainstream media now, they claim.
On the internet.
On the internet. But even on radio, I've heard. Radio and internet.
I'm sure it's getting close. I'm sure it's getting close. But whatever it is, they want their market share back. So you do see.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. You do see them kind of going into this a little bit. You know, I find some fascinating trends that are going on right now. For example, you know, they're reporting about this ninth planet. Suddenly we have this NASA report. Well, the alternative media has carried the banner of this Planet X since about the late 80s. There's been a lot of research about this. And it's been made to look foolish and so on.
Yeah, they laugh at it. Everybody makes fun of it. Right? That's the weapon of choice.
Yeah.
And it works really well.
there was good scholarship behind it, though. You know.
Oh yes, yeah.
It wasn't just like a lark. I mean, they had pretty good idea that there was this other planet lurking right at the edge of our solar system, and now they decree, well, that's what we're seeing. So all of a sudden, it's mainstream. You know, some of these things.
Now it's Planet X. It has that elongated orbit now. But is the one that they're claiming that they found, is that the same one that people are talking about? Or is this not the –
well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm not saying that everything that was attributed to Planet X in the literature about this – you know, it came up because Zechariah Sitchin
– Yes, X, yes.
He studied Sumerian texts. And Sumerian texts gave us that –
which is incredible. That stuff is incredible.
He was one of the few scholars, too. But so much of our Western stories come out of that tradition. The Sumerian, I mean, we know that the Bible is fundamentally based on some of those older Sumerian texts. So you can find, you know, comparisons from the story of Noah and the Epic of Gilgamesh, practically the same story.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that the roots of those stories are back there. So he's somebody who took it on, and he was a fascinating scholar on it, but not a lot of people really took on the Sumerian texts on the level that he did. And his interpretation was that they were talking astronomically. When they were referred to things like Marduk and things like that, they weren't talking about gods. They were talking about planet systems and so on.
Well, the amazing part is they actually know the solar system. How could they know that? They have diagrams showing it. It's just not...
It is very interesting.
It's very interesting.
This is part of the awareness, I think, that we're in now, which is that things aren't quite what they thought. You know, we thought they were. And there's a lot of research to suggest that I think one of the things, whether it's an official academic institution or the political structure or the media, they just don't, they want you to progress at the level they want you to progress at. They don't want you to get ahead of them, and they kind of keep you in a box, basically. And that's one of the things that's so important, and I think it's such a threat to the establishment to have free and alternative media, which is why you're seeing this incredible crackdown on the part of Google, on the part of other aspects, trying to really hem it in. Because for a while, you were having a number of alternative media sites making a difference, talking about the Syrian war. But they were all funded by Google ads. And it's very easy. You know, if you had a site, you sign up for Google ads, you just slap those ads on there and collect the money as you get traffic. So when you had a lot of these alternative sites getting a lot of traffic, it was really fascinating because all of a sudden they represented, you know, even though Google was making money off them, because of course Google gets the lion's share of that money from the ads. But these people were making enough to make a living. And so somewhere there was a decision that was made and it came out in the YouTube policies, and some of the best alternative media sites really took it on the chin, and they lost an incredible amount of revenue, but a lot more just went out of business completely because their whole model had been based on this Google ad thing. YouTube changed the policy, and they included kind of interesting language, like advertiser-friendly was the term for the ads. So advertiser-friendly meant that if you had something in there that was critical of the U.S. war in Syria, for example, that might not be advertiser-friendly. So they're not going to run ads on it.
Well, and so that's the problem with everything being automated, because they look for keywords and then they just skim it out. And so then what's happening is you're skimming out anything that remotely could be good, right?
True.
And now it's Google saying, unless you're a sanctioned person, a sanctioned media site, then you can't cover anything unless it's vanilla.
Yes.
And if you've ever covered anything ever, you're going to be weeded out,
exactly.
Which is scary.
Well, I mean, part of the Google trip, you might think, you know, it might be all they want videos of, you know, how to apply my makeup and how to, you know, kind of have my pet poodle joke video and stuff. I mean, if you think about it, they lost a tremendous amount of money themselves, though, which is why they introduced pay versions for the first time. Last year, this thing called YouTube Red, where you pay $10 a month and, you know, you don't have to deal with commercials, which is kind of absurd considering the type of format that YouTube is and how it started. Now you're just paying for what it used to be a couple years ago. But what I do find interesting about all this is they have to make up that revenue somehow. And what it does is it represents an opportunity for somebody else to come in and really grab that. Yeah. So
basically, all it does is there's another company that can be competitive. It opened up another market for another company.
The market share is there. People want real news. They want the real story because they're making real financial decisions. They're making decisions about what they're doing with their family's lives. And I think more and more it becomes obvious to them that the corporate media can go so far. If you want basic trends, if you want sports scores, sports analysis, if you want very superficial financial analysis of what's going on, you'll get that in the corporate media. But you're not going to get anything hard-hitting or deep anymore. If that era is gone,
They are afraid to offend anyone. They're afraid to do anything other than vanilla because of who their donors are and who owns them, right?
No.
Now, do you think Google did this because they had a lot of pushback from their advertisers? Like, their advertisers do not want to be on some alternative site that disagrees with, you know, because a lot of people can't handle what alternative media is saying, right? They just don't want, it's kind of like the Plato's cave allegory. Have you heard that one where people are looking at the shadows and when they're forced to look at the light and they don't want to see the light and they'll run back into the cave. And then if they're forced to go out there and learn, then they're like, oh, and then they realize they're seeing the light. But the other people that are in the cave that saw that whole process go on, now they really want to fight because they saw what happened to that guy. And that guy's really messed up now. But yet that person wants to help the other people not see the shadows in the cave. And so it's that whole thing. And that's kind of the allegory. That's what's kind of going on in the alternative. That's such a great, you know, comparison.
I totally agree with you. See, what's fascinating about it is the 800-pound gorilla is out of the closet. And this is the thing. And a lot of it came out with Edward Snowden, frankly, because that was the point at which the regular public got to see what the alternative media already knew. Now that's a tricky thing. What do you do with that? Now you say, yeah, I guess they're spying on us and collecting our info and so on. So it changes the dynamic a little bit. Now, 5 years ago, had you been saying that, they would have said, well, that's just a conspiracy person saying, being paranoid, saying they're spying on us. Well, now you have the documents. Now what? So does your paradigm change? So this becomes a thing individually. And I think what's happening is people realize, oh, okay, I am starting to get it. I'm not getting the truth. The corporate media lies to me. Where do I get the truth? Now, that brings us into a very tricky area because the alternative media is like the Wild West.
Well, it is, and it's...
Yeah, it is not. It's right, and the corporate media is wrong, not by a long shot. I mean, there are many elements in the alternative media I would have nothing to do with, and neither would you. You know, it's this thing where, you know, in dark journalism, the way that I frame dark journalism, which is what I do with the Dark Journalist Show, is dark journalism has three aspects. There's the official story, like we were talking about with the corporate media. You'll get the official story. Then there's a counter story, which comes about as a result of researchers coming together, looking at this information, usually talented people, professors.
Trying to figure out the truth.
Yeah, exactly. And they get around some of the loopholes in the official story. That's often called the conspiracy theory, but in actual fact, it is the counter story, and most of it's true because they're doing research. They might not have as much access because they're being blocked off. But then there's a third element that I call third force or junk conspiracy. Now, this is something that's actually occasionally, I would say most of the time, funded by the people behind the official story or supporters of the official story. So you'll have one regular story that comes out about something. Then you'll have the secondary story come up that gets behind it. You know, and certainly we've had, I always use the 2008 crash, for example. There are a lot of people, the official story is, oh, there were some bad players or people got subprime loans and didn't, you know, crash the economy. And then if you do a little more research, you understand a lot of it was engineered, and it was engineered for financial gain. So that's kind of the conspiracy theory. But as time goes on, we learn that that's more and more true. But then the third force story, the junk conspiracy thrown in there is, well, the next step was FEMA camps.
Exactly.
A gigantic
show. They do something like everybody's losing their mind kind of thing.
Yes. So it has to, it's kind of the wild story. And it makes you think, oh, I can't go that far out. I'm going to go back to the official story. So we're seeing a lot of that infiltration. And I can identify two for you right now that are going on. It's a very important story going on about holistic MDs being killed.
Yeah, that's a serious story.
Yeah, we're doing a major story at the end of February, a big episode on it, with Erin from Health Nut News, who's been tracking the story, and she came up with so much of it. And these are real people who've dedicated themselves, men and women, to holistic health, and they're doctors and nurses, and there's a systematic death list going on of these people, especially people, some of them actually had had trouble with the FDA because they were anti the excessive vaccine, or they had done vaccine examinations, they'd done their own research, they'd come out with papers on it. But a lot of them are associated with this GCMAF cancer research, and certainly we're going to get into this very deeply in the episode, but just to touch upon it briefly here, this is a very serious story. In the alternative media, which is breaking it, and the corporate media is still leaving that alone, and there are some very hardcore details about this story. For example, Merck, which is a major drug company, they got taken to court, and there were some court papers that were released that showed that, in fact, they had targeted doctors, not for termination, they didn't hire hit teams, but they had targeted them for ruining their reputation so they could get certain drugs passed through the FDA. And they needed those who were opposing them to be taken down somehow. And some of the language in that court case from the Merck employees is shocking. And reading that, I highly recommend people do. And certainly, we'll cover a lot of that also in the episode. But one of the things that I found in there was that they said, and I'm paraphrasing, but we're going to track them down and take them down. So that was from a case where you had doctors coming on the record opposing their new drug, which they found dangerous, but which Merck wanted to sell anyway. So it's very important to understand that on some level, this type of thinking exists. So now we extrapolate that out and we go look at the holistic MD situation. Why are so many holistic MDs dying? And this is an incredible, I think that we're looking at something like 20 cases now in the period of about a year. So, it's an incredible pattern and it continues. Something recently happened as recently as 2 weeks ago.
And it's weird deaths, right? It's
one of them I found very strange, very, very strange. There was a gentleman who had gone and checked into a hotel room. And they said, well, it's not quite ready yet. And he said, well, that's okay, I'll go to the store. So he goes to the store, he buys a bottle of wine and some hummus. On his way back, decides that his life isn't worth living, blows his brains out, jumps in the river, and leaves the gun by the riverbed. So, these are the types of cases that just don't add up. A lot of the cases look funny, and, it's a very sensitive topic because people have lost important people in their lives. But I think it's the kind of thing that we need to look at and look at deeply. So this is a very serious story coming up in alternative media. Now, simultaneously with it, you see a third force junk conspiracy story coming up right beside it. And the third force story, in my opinion anyway, is this flat earth stuff that we see everywhere. And oddly enough, it's so absurd. It is these far-flung theories that we haven't been given the truth and that earth is a flat plane and all this kind of stuff. But oddly enough, it's taken up a lot of the oxygen of this story that's coming out around the holistic MDs. I see those, I watch press patterns on a regular basis. I sort of take an eye into what's rising, what stories are coming out, and so on. And one of the things I noticed was that Flat Earth was showing up everywhere that story was showing up. Almost like, can we mix these two in the public's mind so that they don't understand the importance and the severity of the original story by giving them this junk conspiracy story, which
try to almost discredit it by putting something really stupid next to it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so it becomes the stuff of like a tabloid.
Yeah, like nobody believes in what's in a tabloid because it's just goofy. Yeah. So if it's in there, like even if it's real, they do have some good stuff in there, but it's not.
Sarah's magic word is goofy. I'd call it junk conspiracy. Say it's goofy.
Well, there's a pretty serious, this was back in the Bush administration, but I was just watching some stuff about with I just did a really great interview with Gwen Shotwell, which is the president of SpaceX, and I was watching some stuff about military in space, because so much of the military now is NASA has lost a lot of the funding, as we all know, and the military gets a lot more of the funding, and the military budget for space is a lot larger than NASA's budget. And NASA's now focused on science more hardcore, like looking at what the planet, you know, just more science. And although military is based on science, anything in space is science, but more exploratory science versus military science. And there was a back in the Bush administration in the mid-2000s, there was around the world, there was a lot of stories with the United States militarizing the space, and they didn't like it because the United States is taking over the outer, you know, the orbits and stuff from the moon to the Earth, and we're taking over the military areas, and we're turning in, there's bases up there, and I mean, you know, that's what we're doing, and that's the plan. And the rest of the media around the world was talking about it, and they didn't like it, and there was debates and all these things. But in the United States, there was nothing. The wire service, if you do a search on militarizing space, there was one small article in a small, you know, rural town in, I think, in Utah that talked about it. But in other countries, it was all over the place. So it's a good example of how the United States, even, you know, our country just doesn't cover the media like other countries do. You know, I know every country has their own issues, right? We're 49th in Freedom of the Press Index, United States is. So that shows that we've fallen quite a bit. But other countries have their issues too. But from that perspective, it showed that the rest of the world wanted to talk about it and we weren't allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really clear indication that there was something weird going on there. And I think because of the internet, people are starting to be aware that, hey, wait a minute, there's news stories going on outside our sphere, and we don't get to hear about it. And that's an awakening, too.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what's fascinating about that is there's two really big things you brought up there, because the weaponization of space is one of those areas that, you know, you have to pay attention to it sooner or later, because it's the stuff of World War III, if you think about it. And we go back into the 1980s and we see Reagan's Star Wars program, which was the SDI technology. And the idea was that they were going to set up these massive kind of lasers out there in space that would shoot down missiles coming in that were nuclear. And they put a lot of money and time into this idea. And supposedly it got shelved as part of, you know, the deal basically we made with Russia, and because the Soviet Union's economy was crashing, and eventually the Soviet Union just went out. But what happened to the technology is a great question.
Well, of course. We're not going to throw away. Let's just throw it away.
And you know, we've done a lot of shows on the secret space program. I hosted a conference last fall, secret space program conference in Texas. And there is a great deal of evidence from Gary McKinnon, who was a NASA hacker, that we have an entire fleet of off-world officers who are out there exploring much more deeply, setting up bases and doing a lot, and that it's actually funded by the public, and that the official NASA program, as we've talked about before, you know, is shredded down to pre-moon landing levels. We're talking about really basically nothing for a budget. But this is the program that has built up all this infrastructure. Now all the privatization, you know, you spoke with SpaceX, and I can think of a few others, like Bigelow Aerospace, for example. And they're tight with the government, and they get those contracts, and they go up there, and they're going to be able to take advantage of this whole thing. And yet, it was all set up by public money. So this is something that we need to go after, and it is important to the issues on the ground. And somebody might say, well, they're, you know, secret space program. How is that going to impact my daily life? Well, it does, because it's actually an economic issue in the grand scheme of things. Because what kind of opportunities are available out there in space, from asteroid mining to space tourism? They're building a whole economy up there, but they're also weaponizing it. And, you know, we have a number of stories about data being stored in space now. And if it's stored close enough to satellites, then we don't have the ability to subpoena it.
Well, it's just it's a whole secret area, and there's just so much going on. We all know that. And one of the things that SpaceX said, I mean, we need people to research it and go up there, right? We need this because one of the things that we talked about is that, you know, going and living on other planets is probably a good thing. And I read something Elon Musk said about just the human species needs an insurance policy, you know, to be able to have another place to live. And when you think about that, it's almost a certainty with how many people have nuclear weapons. It's almost a certainty that at some point in time that there will be a nuclear bomb exploding somewhere, right? Sure. And the more people that have it, it's just a mathematical equation of the more people that have it, the more hands that have it, and the longer time, you know, time versus people eventually equals a certainty. And that's a scary part, because can we mature enough to keep ourselves alive? You know, can we mature enough as a species to, and so us getting out of the Earth and trying to figure out, can we go elsewhere? But part of my thinking is, you know, we need this, and they know we need it, but the problem is it's not transparent. You know, the SpaceX stuff, that's great. That's more transparent. They're trying to do more, you know, the basic creating like an airline flight, you know, like a shuttle flight. They're just trying to create – they want to be the fleet of people and commercial progress going up in space. They want to create that vehicle, like being an airline
Sure.
And
just corporate opportunities for them.
They want to create the infrastructure, right, so that people can travel and stuff. But if there is all those resources out there, which that's another reason they want to get people out there, if there's all those resources out there and everything else, and then there's all this military opportunity, it's just so obvious that we're going to take advantage of it, right? And that's what's going on. The problem is it's being hidden from the people. You know, the commercialization part isn't, but the whole militarization part is. And at what point is the military base of that really an extension of who we are? And the military starts to take over our whole life and all of our resources, and we become a military type, you know, a society, but it's all hidden from us. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's a major problem with that.
Yeah. We're doing basically somewhere close to $800 billion a year on our military.
Oh, that's nothing.
That's not even with the black budget, Mike.
I know.
But I will say this. There are other aspects to space that are going to be problematic because, as you know, we discuss on my show quite a bit, there's the incidence of UFOs in space, whatever you want to attribute them to. That's the kind of stuff that's out there. And if you have other countries out there, like we know China and India have their own programs to go to the moon, they're launching satellites. My goodness, North Korea launched a satellite, if you can imagine that, into outer space. Horrible. To think of them out there.
Well, they want to get their satellites out there.
But here's an interesting thing. You think about countries like that. They're not within the realm of UFO secrecy, which is an actual official American policy. So what happens when they start showing this stuff that's really out there? It's going to be problematic, and I think that's one of the reasons why we have this great jump. But certainly, as far as secrecy goes, we're number one, you know, and that's a problem. The idea, though, if we're going to start to look at what's happening in outer space, especially in what's sort of immediate here in our solar system, you know, we're going to have to grow as a culture about what's out there. And, you know, we have these whole programs dedicated to reverse engineering craft. And these are programs that we've had whistleblowers for years about them. What does it represent? What does the UFO phenomenon represent in this regard? You need transparency in journalism and the ability to take it on as a subject. And the culture also, I think at this point, you know, we're seeing signs in the culture, everything from Pepsi doing this Black Knight satellite commercial. And the Black Knight satellite is from UFO lore. It's actually from Donald Kehoe, who was an Air Force major back in the 50s. And he studied a number of the pictures that we had there at the time from NASA in outer space. And there's something that came up that looked very much like a Black Knight. And they kept seeing it. Nobody knew what it was. So it's a real kind of cornerstone of UFO lore. And so So Pepsi used it as the foundation for their commercial, and they created this incredible 10 minute Hollywood rollout of this thing. And you think about it, what were they doing? What did they even spend that money on?
Well, it's crazy because they tied it to Tesla, because Tesla actually in 1899 identified this Black Knight satellite and was getting signals from it. And then 1932, two other engineers identified it as well. Yeah. And Tesla wrote a big thing about this in 1901 that was published. And I read that on air with the Thrive radio show that I was just on. And it's, yeah, like you're saying, Pepsi first talked about Tesla and he found it in 1899. And then they say, this is not fiction. This is true. And then I think that a lot of the rest of the show is fiction, obviously. I mean, but they base it on this fact and then they go on
What they were doing is they just grabbed elements out of, you know, alternative media. The Anunnaki, which we talked about earlier from Zechariah.
Yes.
And they grabbed the Black Knight satellite and Nikola Tesla, all pillars in the alternative media. But see, what they realize is that there is a market share. People are interested in those topics. People's consciousness are actually growing faster than the way that they're fed corporate media.
Yes.
So what are they going to do with that? So you do see things like, you know, we had the return of the X-Files show, but when the X-Files show came out recently, they were filled with, you know, all kinds of government secrecy aspects. They were so advanced in a way. They had drawn so much from the alternative media research that, you know, you took a look at that and you say, wow, you know, that's out there in the open now. People are talking about reverse engineered ET craft. They're talking about, you know, Nazi underground groups that left after the war and thrived in South America and financed much of the drug trade and things like this. So, you know, it is, the word is getting out there with that. But the question is, we have this kind of schizophrenic situation, I think, where the regular corporate public news, you know, the corporate media, the mainstream media looking at this, they don't do anything about it. They stick to the traditional lines that the government sticks to because the government wants to keep the technology for themselves and they don't want the public to know about it. So it's that level of secrecy which makes the public level and this breakaway level, you know, we're looking at two different forms of viewpoint. And in the 21st century, it's not a tenable situation because you're assuming that the average consciousness of the public won't penetrate your secrecy, and it's too late.
Well, but do you think that I still think the average person is afraid to mentally go there? I think that the Plato cave allegory makes sense.
Yeah,
the metaphor that some of these people are afraid to go there, and maybe the government can't, you know. The problem is, why can't we actually openly discuss this stuff and go, what is this? You know, whether you believe it or not, there can be a whole group of people that choose not to believe it, but why can't you at least go and look at it and go, okay, what is this? There's something obviously here. Can we look at, let's just not debunk it and make fun of it, because that's not, to me, as soon as you start making fun of it, we're like, well, now you're not serious either. I you know, there's all these facts that are pointing to something, you know, and now you're making fun of it. Well, you're wasting my time. You know, I want some serious look into some of these things. And I think that a lot of these people are like, if we can at least be open and more say, okay, let's look at some of this stuff more seriously. I think the regular people would be ready for a lot of that.
Absolutely. Well, there's two levels there, which is, you know, on one level, we're looking at the government secrecy aspect and all of the things that that entails, you know, because, of course, it entails the entire operation of a secret system of finance. So the question is, on a public level, what does it mean to me? But when you see the crash of 2008, for example, when you see the Snowden revelations about NSA, for example, I think you get into these modes where you have to say, it does come down to me in my everyday life after all. It's not a kind of nebulous thing. It's the growth of understanding the reality that you're in. However, if you have a false version of reality fed to you by the corporate media and you don't get to the transparency issues, then you're living in a hazardous state, because a number of things could happen behind the scenes pulled the strings by a small group, whether in financial circles, whether in government circles, whether in circles of institutions that are harvesting the assets of the regular populace. If you don't have that information, you're in a kind of dangerous position. So that's why I do the work that I do, I think, because the ability to bring transparency is there in an ostensibly open society, which is what we have. But nonetheless, the forces of media blackout, the forces, you know, that will threaten a CBS newswoman like Cheryl Atkinson, who's reporting on the Obama administration, and say, hey, we're going to put you away under the Espionage Act, and we're going to, you know, we're going to surveil your computer. I mean, it looks pretty Orwellian. The situation looks pretty Orwellian. I think we better get going with a new paradigm in the press. That's what I think of as dark journalism. And, you know, there are forces in alternative media that are out there, like Forbidden Knowledge TV, I think fktv.is, incredible information on a site like that. Cryptagon is another incredible news website. These alternative websites exist, I think, along with dark journalists, along with business game changers. This is the type of information and material I think people need. And, you know, Solari.com, of course, Catherine Austin Fitz. This is another angle on it. She's coming in from the money angle. You deal a lot with the business side. So I think as we find these people with different expertise who don't buy into the official line, we have a shot there, I think.
You got to stop laughing at some of this stuff and say, okay, what's really behind this? I'm not going to laugh away something and say it's a joke. It's not, everything's not automatically a joke. You know, let's look at this stuff. And if Tesla found a satellite in 1899, well, what's that? Let's look at that. And that's not a joke, you know. And just to blow that off and say it's space junk is not satisfactory, because why did he do that, you know?
And, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
I mean, incredible. If we think about Tesla, I mean, he introduced wireless energy, you know, back in 1913. We could have had that, and he wanted to have it free for everybody. So you can imagine the kind of threat he was to these stuff.
Oh, he was a genius. He was a genius. Can you imagine what we could have? He was totally shut down. He died a poor man all by himself, and he was completely shut down because he was so they were frightened by him. He was very intimidated by him because he was a genius. And I think – anything that frightens the status quo or anything that threatens the status quo will be shunned, right? So there's people's behaviors that shunning alternative media, that is just the natural human behavior shunning something that threatens them. And then there's the official behavior, which is we don't want to disclose any secrets. You know, there's a difference. And how much of that is now, for example, there's a pressure from mainstream corporations, regular corporations that do not want to be affiliated with alternative sites that cover things that are getting laughed at. You know, that's a very serious issue. And so how much of Google shutting down ads is because the average business didn't want to be affiliated with something that's getting laughed at versus versus the government saying, putting pressure on Google saying, hey, I don't want you supporting these alternative media sites.
I actually think it's more of the latter.
You know what I mean? It could be a combination of both. And I think that all Google had to do was say, and this is a very simple solution, Google, all they have to do is say, are you willing to advertise on alternative media sites? Yes or no? There would be a lot of commercial companies that would be willing to advertise on different media sites. Mm-hmm. And give them the option. Give them a list and say, okay, here are some alternative media sites. Or, you know, allow things to start opening up that way. Because I think they would be surprised at how many regular companies, small companies all over America, that would be willing to advertise on some of these media sites. Now, maybe the big corporations like Nestle or something, they do not want to because they don't want to, you know, they got to keep their whatever they got going on with the local governments and the government going. But a lot of small businesses across the country would. And so, you know, and or if you are a competitor of Google, hey, Google just gave you an in, you know, to a whole market. But there's ways around this. We don't have to shut out whole press areas.
Well, you mentioned Nestle. I have to say their CEO came out and said water is not a human right.
That's why I brought up Nestle, because I know they're pretty controversial with water.
Yeah, I think in what you just said, you probably just got business game changers blacklisted by Google. I want you to know that.
I think I'm already blacklisted. I don't know why. Because I am more of a – I talk to everybody, and I want it to be a smart dialogue. So me being blacklisted from Google just doesn't make sense.
Well, see, you go for the real issues. You're going to find some trouble.
You get by this? Because obviously...
I never used a single Google ad on my stuff, and that was part of the thing, which is with Dark Journalist, it was all viewer-supported, and I certainly took a chance starting it, but the thing is about it, I never had a Google AdSense account with it, so when they defunded the alternative media, I was unscathed. It didn't do anything to me, but I saw sites and people and resources go down hard. And I want to really emphasize that people lost their businesses. These were, people who were doing publishing on a daily basis. They had huge audiences. And those sites, some of them are gone. Many of them have rebuilt. I mentioned Forbidden Knowledge TV, one of the best sites, because there's so much information, I think, there. But and they're getting into video shows. They show regular video shows. But some of those companies were able to retool and come back strong, I think, and that's still a process that's going on. But boy, did Google try to take them out by those changes. Now, Google wasn't the only thing. I mentioned these other factors, like the Media Shield Act was certainly one of them in Congress, and certainly some of the things that we heard from Cameron and others about cracking down on radical voices or the voice of conspiracy online. But all that really is shadow talk for shutting down dissent, and that's what it gets down to. So they might sort of masquerade it as we're fighting a kind of Islamic extremism online, but everybody gets caught up in that net. You can get the people who expose your political kind of wrongdoings out of the picture as well. So never fall for that line, because certainly there's always more to it than the eye can see.
Well, absolutely. But when is it? What is alternative media? Because at what point is it that the business game changers is just mainstream media? Dark Journalist is just mainstream media. Why are we, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Well, I think what it is too is that the old guard doesn't want to give up their position, But the problem, again, with the old guard media, and this is like, Fox and CNN and a lot of these things, but even with the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and all these things, they go golfing with the congressional people. They go golfing with the president. I mean, they have those relationships. And the thing is, I think that for a long time, that relationship's been too close. It's too hard to cover something that you're that cozy with. Maybe you won't get an invite to the White House annual press dinner if you're critical.
if you just tell the truth, it can be very frustrating for people to hear it, right? Because let's say you're having a debate with somebody, even an argument that I'm having with my – I don't have an argument with my next door neighbor, but let's imagine I have an argument with my next door neighbor and some objective person wants to come in and document our argument. Both of us would be mad at that objective person because they're not seeing it from our perspective.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's just at a basic level, they don't want to cover a story with people they're too close to because they're going to make people angry.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're in the 21st century. You've got a smartphone that connects up to the internet and you can talk to anyone in the world on it, I think we're at a level where we can't really function with the kind of secrecy that goes on, because the technology has sort of surpassed the ability for the secrecy to have an impact in that way. So the secrecy really looks old. It looks like the dinosaur explanation for things. There's no UFOs, even though you're seeing them. There's no chemtrails, even though you're seeing them. A lot of the models we have of history, now that we have satellites out there, they could take a picture of something like ancient Egypt, and you get an idea of weather patterns and things that say, well, that civilization actually thrived there 10,000 BC. There's a lot of archaeoastronomy on the ground that would indicate that. So a lot of these things need to be rewritten, but the people who are sitting in those positions, kind of holding on to this information, holding on to their power, they don't want to hear it. And so we're in the middle of a paradigm, but especially in the media, which is why I think this is what I'm doing with it. I think in the media, the real battle is on, because you can't, there was a kind of famous guy, Baghdad Bob, and he used to give these press conferences while we were bombing them in Iraq. And he was just standing there saying, hey, we're winning. You know, they're not in Baghdad. And the bombs were shaking his little press conference. That's how I think of the corporate.
Well, that reminds me of the Taliban when they were saying, we still have the city under control, and they have this Taliban guy. Now, the U.S. media used it to show them how idiotic the Taliban were. And he was sitting there, and then our cameras would show that we were like two blocks away from him taking over the city.
No, it's true.
But he was reassuring the people that they were under control.
Well, see, some of this is coming up in the presidential election we see here in 2016. This is very interesting because, you know, they're talking about these issues, but really, when you get down to the Republicans and the Democrats, the one thing they have in common is they won't go there. And when I mean they won't go there, I mean they won't talk about GMOs, for example. They won't talk about excessive vaccination and fact that...
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Are you going to say Donald Trump?
Donald Trump did talk about it. He talked about excessive vaccinations and how he didn't want his children having that many vaccines.
Actually, yeah, I'll give him credit for that. Although he backed off on that, and when they asked him about it again, he actually he also has made some statements about shutting down aspects of the internet. So I wouldn't hold him up as a But yeah, he slipped up and said that. You're right. But I'll say this about the vaccination thing. You know, this is coming into people's consciousness, and they've come up with these lines now, you know, so it's like anti-vaxxer. You've got that. But you've gone from the early 90s of 4 regular vaccinations, and you're a mom. I mean, you know these things, to 40 was what they recommend.
Well,
now, it seems
it's like 56 or something.
56, even worse.
It's in the 50s. I don't know the exact number, but it's crazy.
Yeah, so there's this explosion of it, but it's an explosion of corporate profit, and they kind of don't care what the side effects are. They have a fund which sets up, which gives families that have damages from vaccines billions of dollars. The fund is paid out billions of dollars. They don't give that to the families. I mean, they give them a very small amount. But what they do, if they've paid out that kind of money, you can imagine that there's a lot of medical problems with those.
You can't sue. You can't do anything. The problem, you know, I've heard about one vaccine that, I hope this is the person you have, and I got to check. There's a woman that really covers vaccines very well. There's a vaccine that we have in the United States that goes for teenagers. And basically 90% of the cases are in other countries, in third world countries. And it happens in, something like the percentage of problems with the vaccine is higher than that likelihood that you're going to get the disease of the vaccine in this country.
Fascinating.
Right? Yeah.
That's right.
And so they got the stats.
Oh, Carrie Tenpenny. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a nurse for Merck. Mm-hmm. She investigated and she said, it's crazy because it's more likely for you to get a side effect than it is to get the disease. And the problem is the disease is something that almost everyone can fight on their own. You know, it's like chickenpox or something where you can fight it on your own. You don't want it, but you can fight it. But the side effects is severe trauma and seizures and paralysis and of these young people.
But here's the thing. This is the interesting thing about the absolute chokehold the pharmaceutical companies have on the press. Because if you challenge it, then suddenly you don't believe in any vaccine at all, which is not true for the majority of people. They just want to know why they've gone from 4 to 56.
We just want things that if it really works, then this makes sense. But something where it's what my example right now that from her is a perfect reason why there needs to be research into this.
I always go back to aspartame. Aspartame was actually rifled through Congress for the FDA, and it was for Rumsfeld's company before he was the defense secretary. Or actually, he'd been defense secretary in the 70s, oddly enough, first. Then he went to go work in the private sector, and his company created aspartame. Now, aspartame is a very hazardous chemical. And it's been proven to cause cancer over and over again. But we had it in our soft drinks and in Pepsi. Diet Pepsi had it. Diet Pepsi removed it last year. And they didn't claim that they removed it because it was cancer-causing. They were just like, enough people don't like it, so we're going to take it out. That's a huge victory, by the way, for alternative media sources because they're the ones who hammered away on that kind of a story. And it turned out, that Pepsi had to do this. This is the important thing. Now, when you talk about something like that, how many Diet Pepsis, Diet Coke, have you had since the late 80s? Think about it.
And the sad part is I grew up in the 80s.
Yes.
You know, and 80s and 90s, and that's when I was a high school, college kid, and and I drank a lot of it, and probably a lot of people, young people like me did too. Mm-hmm. What does it do to your body?
It's very important stuff.
Maybe that's why I gain weight too easily. That's my problem.
Oh, come on. They're going to say, you don't gain
weight. What happened when I got 40 or after I had kids? It's because of that aspartame and that Coke.
It was aspartame. But the fascinating thing, there are incredible studies that have been done about aspartame and its hazardous effects. And the thing is, corporate America rifled that down everybody's throat because they wanted a sugar alternative. They didn't care that it caused cancer. I'm not saying that they intentionally created it to have cancer. They just, once they found out that it did, they didn't care to stop it. I think that's the important difference. That's what you see a lot, the kind of callousness in corporate America. I'm afraid to say the culture in corporate America needs to change. You know, that's just the nature of the thing. And of course, you can't really label everything corporate America, but the dominant trends, the big companies, you know, that have done these things.
But don't you...
Obviously, I think it's important for them to have an ethical basis. And the only way that they're ever going to have it is if the media exposes the kind of ugly things that they do for profit.
Yes. And because people are people, right? Since the beginning of time, people have done stuff like this. We know that that's the nature of people, that if not all people, but a certain percentage of people are going to protect their wealth in a very unethical way. And we just know that the certain percentage of people are going to, that's why the media is so important. That's why a clean government is so important and why we need to have a media looking at a clean government so that the government can make it work, can make our society work. You know, that you don't, government can't be corrupt otherwise. And we know that people are the way they are. And so a certain amount of government is going to be corrupt naturally unless we have a media that exposes it. Same with corporations, unless you have a media that exposes it. And if we're going to be all tied in, and it hurts the people who are causing it to be tied in as well, right?
Sure.
It hurts everybody.
You have a business school background. When you look at this and you think about the perfect functioning of a business, and you look at the press and you look at the government, how do you feel? I mean, do they seem dysfunctional to you from that business?
Well, you know, if from a business, from a big, large corporation standpoint, you don't, it helps protect their monopoly or their business, right? That's the definition of a monopoly or a oligarchy or whatever, where you got multiple businesses that have control. And so they're using it to protect their business. And that's when it becomes a problem, because the whole point about free enterprise is to break down those walls so that, and it's not so that everybody can be, it's free enterprise has so many benefits that are just beyond, making sure that they can't have the pie. It's not about saying, well, we want some of the pie too. That's not what it's about. You know, it's about allowing innovation to thrive. It's allowing the growth of our species. Right? Our species will be held back. Human beings will be held back on evolving if you don't break down those walls.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so it's a bigger problem than just saying, well, we want part of the pie too. Well, that's not what we're fighting about, who gets what part of the pie. We're fighting about the basic idea of innovation and human beings thriving. You know,
well, this is the nature of the problem. It's that it's gotten to such a point, I think, with the secrecy. We were talking about secret finance. Now we're talking about corporate manipulation of the government in order to keep secrecy in place about certain things. We use aspartame as the example. I can use 56 excessive vaccinations.
It's a lot. Well, I mean, just putting in this tiny little body.
Absolutely.
You know, putting all that stuff in it. It's an issue. I mean, come on.
The autism link, forget it. It's off the charts. But it is one of a series of issues. And I think that these forces that have been profiting from doing that, and this is some kind of a nexus between the intelligence services, the government, these Wall Street forces in corporate America, there are elements embedded in there. It's not the whole of the thing. There certainly are good congresspeople. There certainly are good corporate leaders. There certainly are good Wall Street investors. But the core of this force, and you know,
system.
We see the wealth being drawn further and further up to the top. It is a small group that is working through this network, and it's using that power. But it's using the press secrecy, I think, more than anything else. And that's why, for me, the fundamental edge to come in on is to break the press secrecy. That's the thing.
It's the step to allowing our human beings to thrive, right? It's breaking down that.
There's a lot of things in it because, like you said, the public itself needs to take a better look at the information. But I'm inclined to think that they do. There's a big aha moment with the public when they say, oh, we're not getting the whole story. It gives them the ability to reassess and maybe say, you know, I'm not going to be taken in by a lot of these things. That's important. That's life-changing stuff. And that's the essence, I think, of doing the right kind of journalism. I call it dark journalism, but it's just getting to those facts of transparency and understanding the world that we're living in. You know, it's that question. It's a rhetorical question, but it's who is in charge of our world and why are they acting this way? And we have to go back to that until we get a satisfactory answer.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I think it's just important to be more transparent, you know, and this is where the media comes in. It's kind of like voting. It's the next step. It was in order for us to be free, we needed everyone to be able to vote, right? Okay, well, we have that, but it doesn't really work because we now have the issue with the media not giving the voters the ability to understand what they're voting on. And so you have to have both ends of the spectrum. Now, there is an issue that I don't know how we're going to get around it. It comes down to the breakaway civilization that people are talking about. But there's a breakaway civilization just at large where as technology and science and education becomes more and more complex, you know, I have an engineering background and systems engineering. I've done some pretty complex stuff with, you know, some pretty advanced things. And, you know, the difference in my understanding, my ability to look at things from a system standpoint in engineering and understand, you know, a big picture and how the data flows around and how all these different areas, all these different entities are connected around the world. And then science and physics and there's a education level. You know, I look at my son going to engineering at Northwestern and the education he's getting versus people who are not graduating from high school and getting sucked into this vortex of drugs or whatever else they're doing. I mean, there's just a breakaway compared to the education level of people, right? It's so extreme. It's so vast that how do you bridge that gap?
Yeah, and well, we'll qualify this a little bit. This is kind of interesting. The regular breakaway civilization represents a group working with technology, advanced technology that the public doesn't know about.
Sure.
And getting all these advantages.
Yes, yes.
You are applying that very interestingly, I think, as a metaphor down the chain a little bit, just to the average idea of you have a group here that will go to college, a group that will be successful, a group that will absorb.
In a different society. And I know it's been like that all through history, but I think it's more extreme now or something.
It's a bifurcation of these two levels of society. And you have one level kind of going down and this other level sort of catching on to the train that's successful. And you're going to have this split level of success where you're going to have this kind of small, relatively small group succeeding and these other people trapped in an older paradigm, not succeeding and their lives going down. And they're not part of the kind of government corporate chart. They don't see the, you know, the government and the corporations probably make money off their failure, oddly enough.
Well, and the technology that's occurring, you know, I had another person on my show that was talking, and he was from Silicon Valley. He's a think tank. He's part of different think tanks in Silicon Valley. And his thing was, we are developing technology at 10 times the rate that the average person can even absorb it and use it. And so we have this issue with how do we reconcile that? So there's an issue with that. And so now you talk about the breakaway civilization and which you're talking about a government, military, secret, you know, world. But there's also these people that are absorbing things at 10 times the rate over and over and over And that compounds itself. So they are so much advanced compared to the people that aren't. I mean, they're still struggling trying to absorb some things from, you know, 10 years ago or something. I'm just, you know, it compounds itself, if that makes sense.
There's no question. Well, we're going faster than our ability to absorb the things that we're learning. Now, this is, I think, a big important aspect of it. That gets us into artificial intelligence. That gets us into this question of, you know, this complete mechanization and the rise of the robots in that sense. But everything is becoming automated, and to such a degree that, you know, it's sort of a cliche. I think even in the 70s or 80s, we had some idea, and you can see in the movies, what will happen to us if everything becomes computer-driven. Well, now we're in the middle of it, and it's becoming a kind of a scientific nightmare, really.
It kind of is, because how do you deal with it? And you can see how the secret, say this breakaway secret military thing, well, what do they do about this big group that can't absorb it? And they take it and they're fearful. They're very fearful of what's going on, and they're going to read into it. It gets down to that Plato, the shadows on the wall thing. They're not reading it right, and they're going to take things out of context. And I'm just looking at the devil's advocate and looking at the other side going, how do they really deal with this, knowing that this is the paradigm of what we're really dealing with science?
You know, I think that they're right to be afraid of it. I'll tell you why. Not because of what it is, but because of how it's being used. You know, we're talking about if this is what's happening, if there's going to be robot bartenders and driverless cars.
We're already there to a certain degree.
Yeah, I prefer a human version.
I do too.
Yeah, and I won't use an automated thing at the supermarket or anything like that. I go for a real person. But I will say this. So you're going to throw a lot of people out of work. What are you going to do? And, you know, you're going to enhance a lot of things. There's, you know, they all have different sides of the coin. Of course, robotics will have incredible benefits. I'm sure we're seeing some of them now. But really, what are you going to do with all those people? And I have a series of episodes that I've done with Catherine Austin Fitz, and it's about America in 2020. And they're available at darkjournalist.com. You can go there and watch them. But that series talks about, you know, when we get to 2020 and we've got, you know, the AI kicking in and we have people being thrown out of work because of the automation, it's not like we don't have good financial opportunities coming up because of the financial, because of the automation and because of the robotics. But really, when you get right down to it, we're looking at gigantic changes there. Now, if we go into it and we're in this kind of world where we don't have transparency through the press, if we go into it and we don't have the answers about the secret finance, you know, systems that exist, if we don't have the answers about the black budget, you know, if we don't have answers about global drug running fueling the stock market, then we're going to go, I think, into a hazardous place in America. It might even become a kind of unrecognizable thing in 5 years.
Well,
it's very important.
We have to have transparency,
right?
Yeah. And we have to have that transparency.
In order to make the right decisions, you know, even as we're looking in this election year, we talked about it. I mean, can you imagine if you or I were on that debate panel asking those people questions, the kind of questions that they would get instead of these softball questions? Like, what were you doing?
Exactly.
Come on.
Well, exactly.
What are you going to do to, you know, how will you ensure that every American has a job? I mean, they're so rhetorical that they don't get into any of the aspects. So, you know, they don't talk, we discussed GMOs, and they don't talk about the pressure of Monsanto, you know, and is this election Monsanto-Goldman Sachs left versus Monsanto-Goldman Sachs right? How are you going to get the influence of that kind of money out of politics? This is the real questions, I think, and the softball things about, you know, like, what did you think of Marco Rubio saying that you acted like a, you know, a jerk in that last debate? And
Why are you two fighting in the sandbox? Yeah, it's just, it's very high schoolish. It's not even high, it's just very even lower than high school.
I think so. It's showing an aspect of America that is not, I think, what we want to show to the world either. I mean, America is a great country, comes from a great tradition, ultimately. And I think the only way we can get back to that, you know, we have to show it in our presidential election. And
well,
I think what we're getting
really
is we're having personalities face off and groups face off. We're not having issues, real issues, deep issues face off.
We
the kind of
like
deep
a,
issues.
We do look
yeah.
like a clown act. And
right
know,
now.
Yeah, I really think it is. But the other thing is, some of the things that in the Republican debate, which I think would scare other countries, is the talk about being militarily tough.
Yeah.
And the way that they're posturing themselves is kind of scary. You know, I'm not sure if it makes sense for us to posture ourselves like we'll take down anybody that even messes with us.
Yeah.
I think the message is pretty clear that we already are doing that. Do you really need to come out and talk like that? And the banter is like that. And I think it's scary for people to hear that.
Well, you're getting into an interesting area there. And this is all I'll say about that, I think, because I know time is limited, but I'll say this. Really, that kind of cowboy diplomacy brought on the disaster in Iraq. It brought on the disaster in Syria, in Libya. And those are situations now where they're saying, oh, they might have to send in boots on the ground to clean it up. That brought on the ISIS trip. So these were bad policies. And the idea of them being repeated without learning those lessons is just a disaster. But I will say this, when looking at the world, all those refugee crises and all the things that we're seeing about Europe and so on, and the terrible incidents there and how it's very difficult for these groups of Muslims coming out of Syria to integrate into Switzerland or areas that the culture is totally different. Really, the majority of that problem comes from the incredible intervention of the West in the Middle East. And if anything, that should be the
Absolutely.
Biggest warning to stop it, because it's leading to bigger problems. That's a World War III issue, you know, and we don't want to go there. So, you know, no more.
But aren't we already there?
Let's see. What's that?
Aren't we already there with World War III? I mean, when you look at Syria and some of the stuff that's going on.
Well, I think that the threat
is there.
Yeah, because Russia, of course, having their forces in Syria and, you know, supporting Assad. And for some reason, which is never really totally explained, we just want to do anything to get rid of Assad. It doesn't matter if you unleash ISIS or if the money we give to rebels goes to ISIS or whatever. For some reason, we have this kind of fanatical urge to get Assad out at any price.
It's not funny, but yes.
Yeah. So they'll say, well, he's a dictator. I mean, how many dictators do you have in the world that we could
take? If you're going to go take somebody out and get this crazy about it, go take out North Korea. I'm all in favor of that one.
Oh, hey, what I understand about North Korea is their satellite took a picture of the Super Bowl. So, yeah, they're the last people I think we want with technology. But all we can do, is say, well, you know, Iran, Iran, if they get a weapon, forget it. Well, these other guys are already making bombs and have satellites. I think they're a bigger problem somehow.
We should, instead of covering it like play by play of what's going on at a superficial level, we need to be the media needs to be talking about the whys. You know, why are you doing this? Why is this? You know, there needs to be deeper journalism so that people, like you always say, you go deep. There needs to be deeper journalism so that people can really understand what's going on. And I know there's a lot of alternative sites. And now with the internet, you can go to other countries. You can go to news organizations in other countries and learn. And that really is helpful for being able to understand what's going on, because other countries have different perspectives. You know, in my class that I taught this fall, I had the students, I had some, you know, about a third of the class were foreigners. And it was interesting. I asked them, what does the rest of the world think of the United States? And they were silent. They wouldn't talk. They just would not talk.
That's a good sign somehow.
Yeah, they wouldn't. But they all kind of nodded that it was very different. They agreed with it, and it was very clear, but they wouldn't give examples and they didn't want to talk about it, right? And I thought that was really interesting how they all agreed that it was different. But it is. It's very different. And I think it's very educational and important for us to see different perspectives so that we can get a grip on what we're doing and why we're doing it. But
yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. Of course, RT was an incredible, showed up on the scene and explored a lot of issues. They're Russian state media, but they were willing to, and they exposed something about the Western corporate media, which is that it is under incredible control. So they were willing to talk about things like GMOs and et cetera, because they knew it was embarrassing to Western interests. In a sense. But in the grand scheme of things, I think we need something from our perspective that really gets to the truth about the things
exactly.
that are going on. Yeah, in America and globally, really.
I see what you're saying, because if all we rely on is other people's, other countries' perspectives, that's dangerous. And so now what's going on, I love this point, because now what's going on is our country's forcing intelligent people to go to other countries and to learn about what's really going on from other perspectives, from other countries and other agendas, right? We want to, and it's not that we want somebody forcing an agenda down our throat, but we really need to see the real side from with it's self-preservation as well.
Absolutely.
It's kind of if you look at it that way, it's national security almost. We're getting all of our people looking outside our media to get information.
You've identified the problem.
I just figured something out.
That's why I got into dark journalism, because, you know, what you have is, I call it schizophrenic state, where the public actually knows more than the media is telling them. That's a very tricky situation. And, of course, the level of secrecy maintained at government levels and corporate levels about a number of topics that we've talked about, whether it's geoengineering, whether it's advanced technology, whether it's these breakaway groups who have access to, because, you know, when you talk about advanced technology, they have access to advanced medicine, you know, advanced science. So they understand things from a bigger perspective. And, that's not, I think, how we intended to set up America, which is, you know, some small group that hoards all the information and all the technology.
Gets back to
decisions.
Yeah, it gets back to us thriving and innovating and growing and maturing as a species.
Yeah,
you know, it gets back to
it's centralization. We can spin it down to, you know, we're on the decentralization team, you and I.
Exactly.
That's what we're doing.
We're decentralizing.
Yeah, we're centralizing. The centralizers are busy with the corporate media and the top 1% of Wall Street, right? And the government structure. That's a centralized process. And it reminds me kind of like the old Soviet Union process, you know, if you look at it and you really study it, because they wanted centralized control. They wanted their centralized economy. Well, that seems to be what we're getting. So we get a little dose of that, and we get a little dose of, like, you know, that kind of militarization of police, the TSA being, you know, kind of going outside of constitutional bounds. And, you know, so we have a number of things that represent a more authoritarian society suddenly since 9/11. But this has been in the works for a long time. So that combination of a centralized media and the corporate media, the consolidation that's taken place there, into six different corporate hands from hundreds. There used to be hundreds of news outlets. So if you combine that with the police militarization, with the Patriot Act and with these things, it's a very different country, and I don't think that that's the model that we want. So I think the first thing is you get the information, you get the transparency going, and it is important to get the perspective of other cultures. I agree with you 100%. But ultimately, it's going to be that homegrown version of understanding.
You have to have it here.
Reality that we're in. You're going to have it.
To have, once again, just for people, the innovation and for the society to thrive.
I think it's crucial.
So what are you doing coming forward? What do you have going on that you can share with us? What do you have going on to help us thrive and innovate and become better? I know you have so many projects. So
absolutely.
Tell us about your future projects and what you have going on.
Well, one of the incredible things we have coming up is we're in the middle of a series on CERN, which is the Hadron Collider that's in Geneva, Switzerland. And which is being funded billions of dollars, and yet the groups that are using it and the funding behind it is very secret. And so we've been exploring it with Dr. Joseph Farrell, and we're finding some very interesting answers about that project and how it actually has aspects to it that don't have anything to do with the cover story. The cover story of the CERN Collider is that it ostensibly is out there as a particle physics. They're doing these collider experiments and using the information to find, you know, the God particle and things of this nature. So it's strictly a particle physics exercise. But what we find is it has a lot of deep state connections, and they may in fact be creating a kind of torsion weapon with it, which represents a lot of political repercussions. So we're going deep into that. We've been doing.
And this is available on your website for your subscribers.
Yeah, you can actually, that's available for free. We have a subscription, for people who want to go a little bit deeper. And, so they can get it. Even that is pretty inexpensive. It's $39 for a year.
Okay.
And, so our free subscribers and our paid subscribers are both growing right now at a good speed. And we're looking at it. But people can go there at any time to darkjournalist.com and get the episodes, the most recent episodes that are there. And certainly if you're there and you like the material, you can subscribe for even deeper stuff and some exclusive material and audio files and things like that. And I would say that right now the shows that are coming up for February and March are absolutely crucial, some on geoengineering, some on the breakaway civilization, the deep state and the black budget. We have an economic episode that I think will really, at the end of February, with Catherine Austin Fitz, the former housing secretary. And that one is very eye-opening. I recommend people look at it because we're talking about the space economy. So it all comes full circle.
That'll be interesting. I'd like to see how much information she has on that. You know, it's the problem is so much of it is dark, you know, the black budget and how much is really going to military. And I'd really like to see what she has. That'll be a very interesting episode.
Yeah, one little teaser I'll throw out there for you is the amount of spaceports that you see popping up in different cities across America. And I've seen some of these. It's very unusual. What are they for? Well, that's part of the new economy that's coming on, and we need to hear more about that because there are a lot of opportunities with it also.
Oh, absolutely. That's very interesting. Spaceports. It's kind of like airports. Now, there's spaceports. We'll have shuttles going everywhere.
Exactly. They're coming.
I see that.
Along with the robot bartender.
That I'm not so sure if I like. But anyways, okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope people come and listen to your shows. Are just absolutely fabulous, very educational and very entertaining as well.
I really appreciate that. Yeah, you can watch them on YouTube. Just type in Dark Journalist. You'll find a list of different categories there for the shows. But, you know, I'm a big fan of your show. I listen to it often. And, you know, the guests and the caliber of the show is off the charts. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day, Daniel.
Thanks a bunch, Sarah.
Unfortunately, I have to end this great interview early. We don't have enough time. To catch the remaining part of this interview, go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can get the whole interview there. It'll also be up on Dark Journalist's YouTube channel, but he's not going to be putting that up until about a week after this airs. So if you want to hear it immediately, go to my website. Or you can see the video version of this. We did a whole video on this interview on his YouTube channel as well. So I hope you get an opportunity to go there. And please make comments, too. I want to hear what you think of this show and other shows that I have done. So for now, I hope you have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.